Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women. Episode 40, I'm joined by multi-award-winning lighting designer Lucy Carter. Initially, Lucy trained in dance and drama at Roehampton Institute, where she started designing lighting for her own choreography work. Soon, she was being asked by her fellow students to light their work, and as a result, became the dance department's lighting technician and lighting designer. On graduating, the university found the money to create a part-time position for her to continue the work she was doing. She then went on to study lighting design at the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama. I want to make it clear up front. If you're thinking lighting design is a spotlight and a range of colour gels, Lucy's lighting designs are the polar opposite. Her work is integral to the production. She creates installations that are simultaneously connected to the narratives, but also hugely sensitive to the performative space, working with the set and the action. Huge lighting panels on kinetic arms, walls of strobing light with coded messages inside, intricate patterns on grids on the floor in which performers are working with and through are a few examples of the strong and beautiful work in which she creates. She has designed the lighting for countless performances covering dance, opera, theatre, and also for installations in galleries and public theatre spaces. She's been a long-term collaborator with choreographer Wayne McGregor, working with him early on when he founded Random Dance Company in the early 1990s, and has lit productions all over the world. The UK, America, Europe, and Australia. To give you a sense of her creative and diverse range, here are three examples of her incredible work. Oil, written by Ella Hickson and directed by Carrie Cracknell, is a set within a set within a set, from a frame delineated by light to kerosene lamps and photographic projections, time travelling us through history. The lighting is a character in its own right. And then there's Peter Grimes, directed by Tim Albert to mark the centenary of Benjamin Britten. Set on a shingle beach, in which the opera is based, the stage was on the water's edge, the audience sitting on the shore. Lucy had to work the elements and the epic natural backdrop, the North Sea, lighting it for when the performance began in daylight and as it continued over time into nightfall. And then Nobody, at Sadler's Wells in 2017. An exploration of theatre, but with no performers present. Lucy, Michael Hulls, and Ninton Sawney installed a fully immersive experience. Light, sound, and projection led the audience beyond the normative. This included being on the stage, in the sound and lighting gallery, and within the bells of the building. Lucy's installations took inspiration from the excitement of theatre, illuminating the spaces usually used by the technicians, makers, and designers. Having been lucky enough to attend, I would say it was haunting, the functions of the space inverted, so with no human performative bodies present. It left a sense of stillness, something akin to missing a memory that you knew existed, but if only you could remember what it was. Lucy has won numerous awards for her exceptional lighting designs, to name a handful. The Critics Circle National Dance Award for Outstanding Contribution to Dance. She's been awarded twice for the Knights of Illumination Award for Dance and the Olivier Award for Dance. Lucy, what a treat and honour to welcome you to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you very much. That's an introduction and a half.
I was looking at a lot of your work over the last couple of weeks on YouTube and various different productions. And it definitely, for me, is light in its own right for you becomes another piece. It becomes another character. But it's also very sensitive. It doesn't fight with what's happening on the stage. So I'm wondering, in your words, could you tell me what it is a lighting designer does?
Essentially, a lighting designer is a member of the creative team. So we work as a team alongside the designers, the directors, the choreographers, the costume designers, the video designers, the sound designers, the composers. We're all contributing to the experience that an audience member has when they come to watch something, to watch a live performance. And as the creative team, we create the concepts and the visual look for me and the designers, the visual looks of the production or the aural looks for the sound designers and composers. And that starts right at the beginning of the process. So therefore, you have this fully integrated experience that you were just talking about. But as a lighting designer, essentially, I'm responsible for the way the lighting looks mm-hmm. and what the lighting communicates subconsciously to the audience and how it changes and develops throughout the performance.
Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if you can tell me what's the difference between a lighting designer and a gaffer?
I think the gaffer in film is the kind of chief electrician, the person in charge of realising the lighting. Mm-hmm. And they would work under the DOP, director of photography, or the lighting director in television. So I'm more like the director of photography or lighting director because I'm deciding how it should look, mm-hmm. but I'm not providing necessarily the expertise about how we achieve those mm-hmm. looks. Mm-hmm. So I also work with a chief electrician or a production electrician in live performance who supports me and realises my lighting designs. I do draw an architectural plan mm-hmm. or I get someone to do it for me, but I decide where all the equipment has to go and where it gets rigged and what type of equipment it is. So mm-hmm. I do have technical knowledge, mm-hmm. but more and more I call upon my chief electrician to help me with that because mm-hmm. there's so many more forms of lighting and technology and control, the way we control the lights. So you need all the expertise you can get. But yeah, so I'm just doing the designing, the concepting yeah. and the ideas behind it.
Yeah, which makes sense now, actually, because the design element is key because the gaffer normally is responding to the DOP mm-hmm. and then the DOP is responding to director. So that makes absolute sense.
And I guess the DOP is working closely with the director and the designer yeah. to figure out what it needs to look like.
Okay. So I'm wondering if you can give us a bit of a back history in terms of your career, where it began through to now.
Okay. I guess my stage career or live performance career began in amateur dramatics and in ballet classes and ballet shows as a child. But as I went through school, drama was my kind of passion. I wasn't particularly academic, I got by. The ways I was being taught, maths and English and history and biology, just wasn't kind of computing in my brain, which I now understand now, but I didn't understand then. Yeah. You know, I find it really interesting that at school, my art teacher told me to bring in a book and just read my book. They hadn't kind of tapped into the fact that I had a creative mind. It just wasn't in drawing oranges and bananas in the middle of the table and things. So I finished my O-levels and went on to do drama and theatre studies, anything I could do at A-level. And I had to go to the nearest city, which was Norwich, so I lodged away from home because where I lived didn't do any further education in drama or theatre. And then after that, I still didn't have a clue what I wanted to do, so I just continued to study. Mm-hmm. And I went to Roehampton Institute wanting to do drama, and you had to take two subjects. Mm-hmm. And I chose contemporary dance, which I didn't know anything about. I'd stopped dancing by then, so I had to quickly go back and do crash course in ballet and things. But it was while I was there, as you said, that I discovered lighting for dance. We did a 6-week, 2 hours a week module in lighting for dance. It kind of sparked my imagination. I started to assist a lighting designer who came in to light the end of third year exams, uh-huh. pushing his ladder around, and I learnt loads from him, and by the time I graduated, I kind of had become the unofficial lighting designer for everybody's work and my own work. Initially, my ideas came from choreographing. Mm-hmm. I find that interesting because when I analyse my work, I think I use light in a very choreographic way. Mm. And I still kind of think about structure and the way I was taught choreography. I sometimes sit down and go, okay, so where's my dynamic mm-hmm. in my lighting design, which is, you know, there's 5 tick boxes for choreography. I then went to Central School of Speech and Drama to get a bit more of a formal training in it, which mm-hmm. is where I learned how to draw lighting plans and why you needed to draw lighting plans, because previously it had just been an organic mm-hmm. thing. And then I was lucky enough, after a few months after graduating, to get some casual work at the Place Theatre in Euston, which is certainly was then, and I think it still is, a hotbed of contemporary dance. And for 3 months of the year, you'd have three different choreographers in every day. So I was just experiencing, sometimes they brought lighting designers, sometimes they didn't. So sometimes I was lighting them, sometimes the chief electrician was lighting them. We were just seeing so much every single day. And then another 2 months after that of professional companies coming in, a different one every day. Mm-hmm. So it was a massive learning curve in terms of being a technician, because that wasn't my skill. But after 3 months, the chief electrician left and they offered me the job because they needed a lighting designer as well to support all these companies coming in. And I said, as long as you offer me support on the plugging up, I'd be happy to do it.
Yeah.
I quickly kind of gave that up and went off on tour as a lighting designer, but still had a massive experience of learning how to tour lighting, because you have to change it. You have to adapt it all the time. You have to change it to the different lights that are in each venue, but also the different spaces. Mm-hmm. So learning on the job and gathering as much information as I could about the technical side to realise the creative side. And then, yeah, just been lucky enough to consistently be offered work by people.
Well, I don't think it's down to luck.
I guess.
I'd say it's down to talent.
I think, of course, there's a talent and a sensitivity to light and to the work that I'm working on. But there must be a part of it that's about being in the right place at the right time. There are plenty of people who are brilliant who might not have had success. Mm. So it's a bit of both.
True, I will agree with. Can I ask you though, like, why do you think you were so drawn to the light as such? Why? What was the thing that, when you did this for such a short time as well, this 6 week period, 2 hours a week, like, what was it like? Well, this is kind of my voice, or this is for me.
I think I was drawn to it because it's very malleable. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to a set design or a costume design, you have to get physical things, you have to buy fabric, or you have to buy the physical thing that you're going to put in the space. And at university, you don't have those resources. Mm. And there was a dance studio full of lights. So you could start experimenting. And it doesn't cost anything to experiment with a light, maybe a bit of gel, you know, to change the colour. But you can go, oh no, that doesn't work, and then get a different type or put it in a different place. Mm. I guess I just had an aptitude for it and I found it fascinating. And I still do every time I go into a theatre at the beginning of a technical and we bring up the first light, even if it's the simplest of white lights, I still get a tingle because it's so beautiful and it's emotive. Mm. So I guess there's that. But I often wonder whether it was partly about ego, because I was good at it.
Yeah.
And I quickly got to university and realised I didn't want to perform like a lot of people wanted to perform. I didn't want it as much as them. I wasn't keen to fight for a part. But I did discover something that I was naturally good at. But I think it must have found me somehow. I really, kind of as stupid as that sounds. Well, we found each other somehow, light and I.
I don't know if it sounds stupid. I suppose when you realise you're good at something that you like as well, then you're like, ha-ha.
Yeah, and something that inspires you,
yeah,
just in its simplest form.
So can you talk about the role of light beyond the function of lighting the set, dancers, actors? Because I talked about some of your previous work and it isn't just lighting.
Well, the first thing is that you don't see light until it hits something. Mm-hmm. Be that a body or an object or a colour. So it is very much about illumination and visibility, but there's a choice to how much do you illuminate it and how much do you make something visible to the audience. It creates the mood of a work. Mm-hmm. But if you play with visibility, for example, and you conceal the world around a character or a performer and you don't quite reveal it in all its detail to an audience member, and that persists and persists, that's going to make you as a viewer feel tense and slightly unsettled, that there's something ominous about to happen, or you just feel unsettled. So lighting can create the mood of the work or the way that an audience member is feeling, and that's very subconscious. So it's pretty clever. It makes audiences feel things and they don't realize it's because of the lighting. It obviously helps to tell stories, so it can tell you the time of the day, It can tell you location. If you have lights suggesting that light is streaming through a window, you know that you're inside. Mm-hmm. If you have something that feels like internal lighting, you know you're inside. And if you have something that feels more open and expansive, you would read that as an exterior environment. Lighting also acts as an editor. So it draws the audience's attention to the moments that they really need to pay attention to, or it exposes a moment so the audience has to work harder and search, so they feel more actively involved in things. It's like the camera in film. Mm-hmm. It can help edit where we look, at what time and in what moment. But also for me, I think lighting has ideas of its own. It can portray ideas of its own. So there's another layer that it brings. So it can enforce concepts. It can have concepts of its own that help the audience understand the meaning of the work. That's more true, possibly, in abstract work, where we're not dealing with a linear story or narrative. It's also true in terms of something that has a story, I think. And then there's the flow. It takes you on a journey. If we talk about theatre with a story and a script, you can watch a scene and then it can go to black. And that signals subconsciously to an audience member that we're starting again, or we're starting in a new place, we're going to a new place. And it gives you a moment of pause, maybe to consider or maybe to just prepare yourself for the next thing that's coming. Or you could do a visible scene change, which doesn't give the audience member any respite, and they have to continue to pay attention to why it's being made visible, what is changing. Maybe that's saying that it's a continuation, the story is a continuation. Or maybe it's saying that it's developing, the environments are developing one into another, that suggests constant change in life. So it has that ability to help with the flow through a piece of work.
I've never thought about light as an editor. That is such a great term. As soon as you said that, that makes complete sense. Oh my gosh, and how layered the lighting is. Even if you're sensitive to lighting and interested in lighting, yeah, it's saying that all those different layers, the flow, the editing, the change of scene.
I mean, you shouldn't sit there as a viewer and pay attention to those things. They will make you subconsciously understand. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a level that you process after you leave a live performance event. And I think there are moments where that's when you might start to understand what lighting did. It's really interesting because my daughter's doing her GCSE drama and they have to analyse lighting. Uh-huh. The thing she tells me about, oh, well, this character's been put into a spotlight to show their isolation, and this character is in the darkness to show that they're disconnected from the other person. And I thought, gosh, it's so interesting how I do those things without even thinking now. I kind of haven't analysed that and haven't done it deliberately, but I must have done it deliberately. You know, I didn't write in my notebook, put them into isolation. Yeah.
Which is what I was just thinking. It's so nuanced, and there's so much psychology and sense of space around lighting. Like you're saying, that we understand it on subconscious. It's like the unsung hero in many ways, because it's working very hard not to be obvious, but to lead us through all these cues and these narratives or changes. So how did you get to that point?
I don't know. I mean, there's experience, isn't there? Often, I think, just before I'm about to start in the theatre, the part of the process where you start technicals and you start actually using the lights to layer on the set and the performers, I think, oh, I'm actually not sure how I want this scene to look, but I know what my ideas are and I know what my concepts are. And I start to paint intuitively with my tools that I've chosen. And of course, I go down an avenue and go, no, no, that's not doing that idea. And then you come pull back and you try down a different avenue. A lot of it is intuitive, and I've learned to trust my research and the concepts that I want to achieve, and trust my instincts when I get there that I'll arrive. But of course, things happen by chance as well. Once you are trying and painting, that are sometimes more interesting or better at showing that thought and idea.
So within that process, when you're kind of thinking about and you're starting off, what is that? Who are you working with typically in that process? So from the beginning of a production right through to opening night. And I guess if you're on tour with them, as you said, that continues as well.
Ultimately, you're meeting with the lead artist, mm-hmm. which is normally the director, the choreographer, and the producer. Mm-hmm. If it's a new play, maybe you're working with the writer as well. Mm-hmm. But they're the lead artists, and they'll gather their team of people and brief us in a way mm-hmm. about how they want to work, what they want to portray in the work. I mean, it's hard to talk specifically when I'm trying to keep it broad, yeah. but you know, theatre with a script is different from an abstract dance that doesn't have a narrative, is different from a contemporary dance piece that might have a narrative. It's all very different, yeah. but ultimately you talk about the concepts and what they would like to achieve mm-hmm. with the work. And a good collaboration means that then all of the other creative team members would go away and we'd all research around the theme or the idea or the script or the history, or just doing as much research as possible, and we gather back and talk about that. Mm. And we get inspired by each other. We go away again and research more and dig and delve into things that inspire us around those ideas, and come back together. And gradually, through a process of discussion and show and tell and development, you know, if the script is developing alongside some visual ideas, I think that's really interesting. You hone your thoughts down to a cohesive and coherent group of creative mediums. Mm. That's who we work with and how that works. I think at that point, for me, I would then go away and start to say, OK, how do I want it to look and how do I want it to feel? And I try to stay away from technology and what I'm going to use to do it still. I kind of search for images. I can't draw. I don't do that. But, you know, a lot of it's in my head or yeah. just written down as notes. Yeah. Once I know certain looks that I want to achieve, I will go away and then start looking at the technology that I might want to use it, what types of lights, how I might want to control it. You have to research all of that, and you have to figure out where you're going to hang it mm-hmm. or where you're going to put it mm-hmm. and deal with the constraints of the set design or the inspiration of the set design, deal with the constraints of the venue, how the venue can inspire your lighting as well. So there's a lot of things to consider and a lot of things to inspire you mm-hmm. as well. At which point the rest of my kind of close team come on board. So my production electrician, he'll help me realise it technically. And the other kind of close member of my team is a programmer nowadays mm-hmm. because all the lights are so intelligent. They're like computers in their own rights, a lot of them. So I need someone with programming skills who can help me program all of that and turn that into light paintings for each scene or each world that I want to create.
Amazing. So it's like hugely creative and collaborative right at the get-go. I mean, that sounds like so much fun. As it's beaming you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially that cross-pollination. And then I guess it's just honing it down to making it happen.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. And I think the collaboration is the thing that totally inspires me and makes my job exciting still yeah. 25 years in, because yeah. you're constantly working with people who have their own set of resources that you learn about, and that they talk about artists that I've never heard of that I can go and discover for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm always learning, which is a brilliant place yeah. to be.
Yeah. So you've touched upon the technical elements of the role. How much technical knowledge is needed for the role?
Yeah, you need to know your tools. Mm. And it's something that I talk to students about a lot. Because I think with the advent of being able to train as a lighting designer, mm-hmm. there's an expectation that being a production electrician is different, or being a lighting technician is different. But actually, you have to understand what those roles can help with. And I think you have to have been those roles mm-hmm. in, to some extent to understand that, to appreciate how, if you've asked them to rig 20 lights in a very difficult position that's taken half a morning, and then you walk in and go, oh, no, I didn't mean that. You understand that you have to do your homework, and you have to really understand why you're asking them to rig them in that position, and would it help if they were in a slightly different position and it wouldn't make any difference mm-hmm. to the effect that they're going to achieve. So you absolutely have to know your tools. One of your tools is your team, uh-huh. what their roles are like. And then you have to understand your lighting equipment. Or you have to understand that when you're researching that and you read about Lux or At Light's capabilities, what that means. Uh-huh. You don't necessarily need to understand how you're going to get that light to do those things, uh-huh. but you have to have had experience in that. I honestly believe you have to have had the experience of going up a ladder and pointing a light under someone else's direction and making it do the things that it needs to do for that lighting designer. So you have to have a technical knowledge to some degree.
So you just mentioned Lux. What is Lux?
It's a way of measuring light output.
Can we talk a little bit more about your installation mm-hmm. work that you're working on?
I think just along the way and over time, I have kind of found an interest in developing my own ideas. I'm totally interested in how light can tell the story or can tell the idea without other elements or in collaboration with one other element like sound or like a space. And exploring what light can do on its own and how that can move a viewer or take them on a journey or make them question something. So just gradually with space, mm-hmm. I'm exploring some projects and some people have offered me projects. Mm-hmm. So I did a project with ENO where I was the director. It was a semi-staged opera, but I was doing the environment and the visual look of it alongside what the performers were bringing orally and alongside what a large orchestra and three singers would bring visually. Mm-hmm. So it was a light installation that played with the musical score.
Wow.
And that was an opportunity I was given. And then I'm trying to develop quite a large scale project that begins with light, and the light will be the thing that inspires all the other mediums. And I see it as a durational installation of light that I would then commission a sound designer or composer to be inspired by and in. They would be inside the installation as they were creating their work. And then the sound and the light installation would then inspire many other creative mediums to create responses. So on one level, you could get the choreographer in, they could experience the visual and aural world, mm-hmm. they could be inside it and experience what it was like inside and then make a response. I call it a creative inspiration space mm-hmm. because I'm interested in how light can then inspire lots of other mediums to do a creative response. Mm-hmm. So there's things like that I'm exploring in amongst lots of other stuff.
Is there a typical day for you?
There's absolutely not a single day that's typical. If I'm at home, then yes, my day will start with waking up the children and doing that routine mm-hmm. before they go off to school. And then I'll work in a very small room, you know, trying to get inspired and try and get rid of the admin so I can start the creative. But, you know, even in a theatre when we're actually making the work, there's no typical day because the hours that you work can be different. Sometimes you can get 3 hours in a space a day. Sometimes you're there from 9 a.m. till 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. You go away for a few hours, you come back. Sometimes you work overnight. If it's an outdoor space, you definitely work overnight. Mm-hmm. There is no typical day. And, you know, if I'm travelling, then it's entirely different and I don't have any parental responsibilities. So, you know.
What skills do you need to be a lighting designer?
I think you need patience. Because our role comes at the end of the process. Mm-hmm. The director choreographer's had rehearsals, mm-hmm. set designer's been able to make a model box, do sketches and then make model boxes and then make more model boxes, and they can move figures around in their model box with the director and discover how they want it to be. A sound designer's been testing their sounds. And for a lighting designer, you don't get that opportunity mm-hmm. to try. So you have to have a lot of patience, because until everybody else has done all of that and you actually get into the theatre and your lights are rigged and you've pointed them in the right direction, mm-hmm. you can't start to paint. You can't start to play and experiment. So you have to have a lot of patience. You have to have diplomacy because you've got to convince people that you know what you're doing, because you can't show them until you get in the theatre. You have to fill them with confidence that you're going to deliver what you've been talking about for a long time. I think you have to have an ability to analyse things visually. It is a bit of a curse now that wherever I am, I've noticed where the light source is coming from because of a shadow that I'm looking at, or because of the way it's reflecting or something, or I'm constantly analysing things visually or going, how is that? Why does that look like that? Why does that thing that I know to be square look round? Or, you know, so. And as I just touched on, you have to have a strong constitution, because your days are so unsimilar that you're not eating at the same time every day. You're not able to, it's very hard to diet or exercise even. So I think after 25 years, my constitution is probably starting to get a bit cross with me. But yeah, they're my skill. They're my top skills for a lighting designer.
Okay, so what's one of the biggest challenges you've faced in your career?
Describing things or showing your ideas and how that manifests itself in light is an incredibly big challenge.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it's continuous, each production. Yeah. Unless you've got a working relationship like with Wayne McGregor, it's over time, so you know each other very well.
Yeah. The way you both I think work. There's trust. I think the beginning of any relationship, it's about finding out what that director means when they say exposed, because what they mean by exposed is entirely different to what somebody else might. If they've got a trust in me and they understand the language I use to explain things, then yeah. And we have a shorthand. And it's for Wayne and I, you can say, oh, do you remember I kind of did something like that in that piece? Mm-hmm. You have all of that history. Mm-hmm. So it does help. It's tricky to explain a feeling. And I talk about light being an energy. It's just hard to explain that to somebody, but I hope I've got better at it. The other challenge is keeping track of what everybody, all the members of the team, are thinking and where they're going, because a change to a physical set design will really affect what I was trying to do. So making sure that we're all going on the same tack and we're developing in the same direction. I do think that that is a challenge. Mm. Keeping in touch with everybody gets increasingly harder.
Yeah, I guess as you all get busier as well, or you're working on multiple projects, and as you explained, you might be able to Skype in one time, but then you miss a meeting.
Yeah. And also just keeping an openness and allowing people to suggest things that might change your medium, or not having an ego around an idea that because the set designer has just decided to cut an element, that idea won't work at all. Mm. It's about trying to stay open and not panic, knowing that, oh no, I've got no time now to redesign that idea.
How have you come to that? Because that's tricky. If things change like that and then you've got a short amount of time to really then reorientate to produce something else.
I've always internalised stress. Mm-hmm. And therefore, that probably reads as a calmness, which I then have learned, the more stressed I get, perhaps, to emulate that. Mm-hmm. Because then when I go home, there's always an answer. There's always a solution. So I've just learned not to panic in the moment and try. And because actually, if you stay open, then someone might have suggested something that you didn't hear because you were panicking. They might have just said a word that might have solved my problem for me. Mm-hmm. So it's hard, and I don't always do it.
So can you tell me what you love about your job?
I guess I love that there's never a dull day. It's always different. Mm-hmm. I still get that tingle from light, which is interesting, I think, that there's still a visceral response when I see a light. I love collaborating because it populates my mind with new ideas that I never would have thought of myself, or new research to go and do, or a new book to read, or a new artist to look at, or a new scientific approach to go and read about. Mm. So I love that about it. I love meeting people. I'm pretty social. Mm-hmm. And I used to love the travel. You know, it's brilliant when you're young to go all over the world. It gets a little bit trickier when you have family. Yeah. But, you know, I love now that on the times when I can take them with me, that they get to travel and see new places. So, you know, what a privilege for them. Yeah. And I love that they get to come into theatres and see people working and things.
In terms of gender in lighting design within the theatre and within dance, what is the split like?
Women are still in a minority in technical theatre and creative, on the creative side for sure. It's getting better. You know, when I started, there were very few female lighting designers. There were two, Jennifer Tipton and Paulie Constable, because we had kind of mutual friends who were really inspiring to me to kind of go, well, of course I can do that. I never questioned that I could do it. I'm one of four girls. My mum worked all the way through. And I'd never encountered the thought that I wouldn't be able to do what on earth I wanted to do. I wonder now, as a middle-aged woman, if I feel more gendered now. I'm having more occurrences of men finding it harder that I'm having to be in charge of them as I am middle-aged. The experiences I have of sexism are not going away. So I've just had some not very pleasant ones in another country, admittedly. And it shocks me every time that it still happens. Whether I was more oblivious to it when I was younger, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just curious with that, because within film, a gaffer, the minority, they are minority of the minority. I mean, female gaffers are pretty rare.
Yeah. And I would say, if I looked at production electricians, apart from based in venues, I haven't worked with one. So that's the technical side, I guess.
And why do you think that is, that more women are not potentially going down this route?
I think it's that you work in those environments and there are loads more men. And it's not balanced. And personally, I think, and a lot of people I know think, that something that's balanced in terms of gender just works much better. There's a balance of character. It just works. So I think that discourages people. And the thing that I hear the most from, you know, up and coming female lighting designers or female students, they're very concerned about how you could be a parent and do that job.
But you've managed it.
Yeah, and it's entirely possible. We had an incident recently. I work with the ALD, the Association of Lighting Designers. I'm on the committee, and I'm really trying to just change some things that haven't been great throughout my career. Of course, one of them is gender diversity. And we had an instance where someone emailed the wider group and said, oh, I've just been talking to a student who's been told women aren't lighting designers. And of course, all the women on the committee were astounded by it and wrote, well, that's ridiculous. How are we all lighting designers? How have I earned my living, supported my family? You know, my partner did 10 years of stay-at-home parenting while I earn, you know, I've earned a family living. So, of course you can. Crazy that people would still say that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Not only that, you've worked on so many productions across the world and you've won so many awards.
Well, exactly. So there are role models out there, not just me. There are hundreds of role models, you know. So it just seems amazing that people can still say things like that.
Yeah, that narrative's still going.
Why is that narrative still in existence in any job?
Yeah. What advice would you give someone considering a career in lighting design?
You have to be open to experience anything. So you definitely have to be open to start at the bottom and work your way up. You have to be open to any job. And I hate to say it, but I guess it's the same in most industries. 2 weeks of unpaid work experience is going to do you the world of good if you can manage it. Or 2 weeks of saying, OK, I have to do my evening job, but can I come during the day? You know, you've got to be proactive. You've got to expect to train on the job, I think, and not just step out of a training course straight into the role. Research and investigation is something that I learnt doing my degree, because you have to, when you're writing an essay on anything, you have to go away and read around the subject. And that's basically what I do. I go and read around the subject to start with. Before I even look at images, I go and read. You have to be open to that, to be inquisitive and investigate. My advice would be to make sure that every design decision you make is a conceptual one, that there's a reason, a creative reason that you're choosing to use those lights or to put those lights in that place, or that a creative reason why you want the environment to feel like this, as opposed to it just looks good.
So where do you go to fuel your creativity?
I think I follow the inspirations that my collaborators give me, and if possible, you go and see as much art. There's plenty of stuff just on the street and everyday lights everywhere, so you can be doing your research all the time, which is a bit of a curse. But I go to as much art as I can. You go to cinema, look around you, really. And then reading, it doesn't have to be complex scientific books or anything, but sometimes it's interesting to do that.
Mm-hmm. So coming to the end of the interview, mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, and I'm sure you've got loads, what's coming up the next few weeks and months for you?
Okay. I'm currently designing a piece for the Royal Ballet with Wayne McGregor that opens in LA, but which will come back to the Opera House in 2020. I'm doing a musical on the town, which is actually opening in Japan. So I go there at the end of June for a couple of weeks. I'm designing an art exhibition at Somerset House, which is a new thing, which is really exciting and very interesting. I'm designing the exterior of a building. Someone approached me to light up their building at night. Then I'm doing a new ballet for the Bolshoi. So these are the things that I'm investigating at the moment. That's again with Wayne McGregor. I'm reviving a work from 2002, contemporary dance piece for Rombert that opens at Sadler's Wells in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So, there's the historical pieces that come back that need attention. And I'm doing an opera, a Philip Glass opera for E&O, and that's this year. So there's a lot of things, as we were talking about earlier, about just keeping your mind on lots of things and juggling it a bit, letting those things cross-pollinate each other.
Yeah.
If I'm researching a piece of technology, that technology might be interesting for more than one of those shows. So
diverse as well, lighting a building, art installation, ballet, historical pieces.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It must keep your mind so sharp.
I don't know. Sometimes it feels like it makes your mind dull because you're doing too much, But yeah.
Lucy, thank you so much for coming in today. It's been so lovely chatting to you, especially about
life. Welcome.
Before you go, something I ask everyone, is there a career in the creative industries you know little about, you'd like to maybe know more about?
You know what? When people have said, what else would you like to do? I've often thought that I'd like to be a shop window designer. They always look so good, and interesting. But it's also a bit like, I imagine, and I'm sure it's not, so I'd like to know how it's done, that you can go round the department store, for instance, and kind of shop for your elements that you're going to put in your window. And then, of course, you have to consider how it's going to be lit and where the viewer, the shopper, might stand in order to, and how, what those elements are going to inspire to get them inside. I find it intriguing, and I don't know how it happens. And, it's retail, I have no experience, but,
I agree. And, I love shop windows when they're done well.
Yes.
But I'm sorry, they must have to just go shopping in a shop. I mean, surely. Yeah. It must be they obviously have target products. I love this. I'm trying to work it out now.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then they must just go around and be like, I'll take that handbag and I'll take that car.
And they must have a director, the equivalent of some shops probably let them do what they want, have their own ideas and drive their own idea to the end. Or others will be quite prescriptive. And I think it must be intriguing.
It's a great shout. I'm definitely going to have a laugh for that.
I look forward to hearing about that.
Cool. And then also, can I ask you, is there another woman that you could recommend or you'd like to hear on Greater Than 11%?
I think I want to stick within the theatrical world just because there's a lady that I've worked with recently called Tamara Harvey, who's a director, but she now is the artistic director of Theatre Clwyd in North Wales. And I'm interested in that artistic directorship and how you create in that role. Mm. You create your seasons, but you create your venue, you create your teams around you. And I'm interested in how you do that under those strict kind of financial constraints and moral constraints and what your obligations are towards your teams who are full-time employed. Yeah. I'm interested in that artistic directorship and what that involves.
Yeah, she sounds great. Let's try and get her on.
She's also brilliant because she's a mum and she tweets a hashtag working mum. It's really open dialogue and very honest. And because when we worked together, I found her encouraging and open and professional and kind and caring. And sometimes as a director, it can be very stressful and there can be egos involved and it doesn't always play out like that. So I admire her very much for the way she managed us as a team.
Great. She sounds amazing. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review and rate, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. Also, stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases. This podcast is made possible by the support of Hub, an insight-led content agency based in London. A huge thank you to the producers, Pat Murray and James Haberson, and to our editors, Daniel Clark and Laura Francis, and to Maria Continenza for designing the beautiful artwork.